T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome to At Your Service. Brad Young in tonight. And you just heard Maria Kina. And I like that story because she was basically saying that even though the post office may not deliver the mail, Maria Kina delivers the news. And that is a guarantee every hour. Thank you, Maria. The other thing that Maria said that I want to follow up on is she mentioned that, shall I say, spat between St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman and Mayor Tishara Jones from the city of St. Louis. Speaking of that spat, we're going to have Steve Ellman on at probably around 8:35-ish here this evening, right here on Camel X, to talk about that spat. But more importantly, not just to talk about bickering. I mean, the only time that bickering is interesting is when it's, you know, involving your in-laws. Then it's kind of interesting. But really what's important is the issue of fighting crime in the city of St. Louis, which impacts the St. Louis region, the entire St. Louis region. It impacts growth. It impacts the quality of living. It impacts the housing values, property values, schools. It impacts literally every element of our life here in the Midwest. And so we'll have Steve Ellman on around 8:35-ish here on Camo X to talk about that clash of ideals between him and Mayor Tishara Jones. Again, Brad Young, glad you're here with us tonight. I'll be here till 10 o'clock, except when we're talking to Steve Ellman tonight. Phone lines are open. You know, that's something that I thoroughly enjoy. 314-436-7900. Call or text. And a couple of things I want to mention just here in the first segment, and that is that Joe Lieberman passed away today. That may be news to you. He was 82. And what's interesting to me about Joe Lieberman is two things. First of all, he was the first Jewish American to be nominated on a party's major ticket. And the other thing that I thought was interesting is as he moved in his career, he was able to move away from the knee-jerk progressive push in this country. And he articulated something that I called the reasonable middle. Now, was he left of me? He was very left of me politically. But the point is that he was open to ideas. He would discuss ideas. And he was about improving America, not just about towing the party line. And for that, I will always appreciate Joe Lieberman. Big Al is holding here. Hey, Big Al, good to talk to you, sir.
How are you, boss?
I'm doing great, sir. I'm doing better now. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I woke up today, and God is good, so here
all
I am.
All the time.
But I guess my question is to Tishara and everyone that runs these blue liberal cities, just because there's a few bad policemen, and there are everywhere, okay, you can't defund police and then expect crime to go down.
Exactly. I mean, look at San Francisco. To me, San Francisco is the quintessential example of trends in this country when it comes to police, because San Francisco was literally on the cutting edge, Al, of defunding the police, reducing police force, trying to shift to this idea that social workers are more important than police officers, and what happened in San Francisco? Rampant crime, increased homelessness, people doing drugs in the streets, businesses leaving. And so just, I believe it was in January, Big Al, San Francisco actually passed ordinances to increase police presence, crack down on homelessness, crack down on the public consumption of drugs, and to make incentives for businesses to return to San Francisco. I mean, basically, they kind of turned into Dallas, Texas, in terms of their politics because of the consequences of this anti-police sentiment.
When you have no fear of punishment, I don't care who you are, me in third grade, when I knew my teacher loved me and I could do whatever I wanted, okay? And when I have parent-teacher conference and my mom go, I know he disrupts and I know he's your favorite, but when you do not have any fear of anything happening to you, you're going to do whatever you want. And that's what's happening in these liberal cities in the Wild West, is because these liberal leaders are like, oh my gosh, we got to defund, we got to get counseling. Well, you know what? The people, and I feel bad for them, the people in the city, and all these major cities, Portland's another one that you didn't even mention. When you need somebody, who do you call? The police. And if they're defunded and you've cut them because you have what you think is a problem with the police department, and you're not going to go to the head of the police department and weed out the bad ones, and there are, okay?
Of course.
And you defund.
Of course.
And you cut them. Well, who are you going to call? It ain't going to be Ghostbusters.
And it's not going to be a social worker.
You need them way more than me in Lake St. Louis, thank God. So there's a spat going on. Elman knows what he's doing and talking about. And Tashara is off in left field saying defund the police. Well, every internet article that pops up, most dangerous city, ours.
I know, and that's why we're going to have Steve Elman on around 8:33, 8:34 here this evening. But
Tashara,
I do have a question though. I do have a question for you. In third grade, I'll bet you were known as Big Al even then, weren't you?
Big Al just hung up on us.
Oh, I lost Big Al. Okay, Big Al. I can see two things. Number one, that you were called Big Al even in the third grade. Number two, that during those parent-teacher conferences, I can guarantee you that the teachers said to Mr. or Mrs. Big Al, I'm sorry, Big Al is not working and playing well with others. I'm just guessing that was the assessment. Hey, when we come back from this break, I want to talk about something. Obviously, you've seen the video from yesterday's horrific cargo ship crash into the bridge in Baltimore. I happen to have some legal experience with what happens when ships crash into bridges. And so I'm going to talk to you a little bit this next segment about some of the legal ramifications. You're not really hearing this reported anywhere, but I can talk to you based upon firsthand experience of how this will play out. Brad Young, at your service here on KMOX. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The heart and soul of Cardinals baseball, KMOX.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in tonight, and undoubtedly you've seen the video. It's horrific. Of course, I'm talking about the Baltimore ship crash into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. And the latest is that authorities found an additional 2 bodies today from the approximate 8 workers who were fixing potholes on the bridge. And if you've seen analysis of the video, essentially what happened here is this, is that the ship lost power. And if you watch the extended version of the video, then you can see that the ship is losing electricity. It blinks off and then it blinks on, it blinks off and blinks on. Well, on one of those blink off time periods, someone on the ship notified the authorities that the ship was out of control and it could crash into the bridge. So when they notified that, the police literally had 90 seconds to halt traffic before the bridge collapsed. That's why normally, even at that hour of the morning, I think approximately 1:30 a.m. Eastern, even at that time of day, there would be a lot of traffic on that bridge. But there was very little traffic because the police had that 90-second warning and they were able to halt traffic. So the only people that were actually on the bridge were folks who were fixing potholes and they could not get off the bridge in time. And then you see in the video then the ship crashes into one of the pillars and the entire bridge comes down. Now, one of the questions that I heard a lot yesterday were questions about, well, how could the entire bridge come down from that? But you have to remember this, and I am not a math guy. I am not a math guy in any way. But in terms of tonnage and in terms of size, that cargo carrier was essentially the same size and weight as a Nimitz-class aircraft carrier, which is the second largest aircraft carrier in the world, second only to the Gerald R. Ford-class carriers that, of course, we also make. So the Nimitz-class carrier, it's the same weight, same size. So if you crash that into a bridge, there's no amount of barricades or concrete pillars that would stop that amount of tonnage once you have all of that inertia going forward. So I'm not buying into any of the conspiracy theories about the bridge coming down. So the question becomes, legally, the investigation will focus on, why did the ship lose power? And I've read some stories today suggesting that there was fuel issues in the cargo ship and that may have impacted the generating system, the electric generating system on that ship, which may have caused it to blink out. Obviously, that's going to be looked at very, very closely. And because the ship did not sink, all of that information is available. It's all going to be in pristine condition for authorities to review. But the first thing that I thought of on this when I saw the news yesterday was it was a case that I handled back in 2015. And what happened in 2015, it was very well publicized, is that there was a ship coming down the Mississippi. It was pushing a series of barges. And you've seen them. There's one ship that moves, and then there's a series of like an 18-wheeler carrying tractor trailers. But this barge ship is pushing barges up and down the Mississippi. One of those barges broke loose and crashed into the Eads Bridge. And when it did that, there were construction crews working on the bridge, and several of them were injured. One person, catastrophically, he died as a result of working when that barge crashed into the scaffolding that was there on the bridge, caused him to fall onto the ship. He was instantly dead, and I won't describe the details on how that happened. But I was involved with one of the parties involved in that litigation, and it took years for that to resolve. But here is something that I learned through that that will be directly applicable to this situation. I'm not seeing this part reported anywhere, but I promise you that it will be reported once the litigation kicks into high gear, which will probably be next week. It'll be that quickly. But typically, when you see a situation like this, here's what happens. Not with a ship, but in any other catastrophic situation, you instantly see either those who were killed or harmed in the accident. They go and they hire lawyers, and the first thing they do is they file lawsuits, because there's a benefit. It's called the race to the courthouse of getting your case on file first. You get publicity, but you also get preference in terms of choosing the venue, finding out the jurisdiction, all kinds of things. So there's a benefit to filing first. But to me, legally, that's what's very interesting about ship and maritime litigation, because there's a law that goes back to 1851. It's called the Limitation of Liability Act, passed by Congress, signed into law in 1851. Nowadays, it's called the Titanic Law. Now, yeah, the Titanic was early 1900s, so this law wasn't written in response to the Titanic, but the Titanic ship owners used this law to limit their liability. And so since the early 1900s, this law has been referred to as the Titanic Liability Act or Titanic Law, even though when it was passed again in 1851, it was 60 years before the Titanic went down. But here's what this law does, and I think it's interesting because it will apply specifically to this situation. Under this law, the owners of the ship are the ones who are primarily liable, but in order to limit their liability, the ship owners themselves can file a lawsuit. Now, normally, like I said, if there's a crash up of 18-wheelers on the interstate, it's those who are injured. It's the plaintiffs. It's the families of the decedents, that those who are injured, that file the lawsuits against the transportation company. But under this Limitation of Liability Act of 1851, it's literally the defendant, the ship owner, that files the lawsuit and names an unknown, whatever named people that they know of at the time, and then they can also name additional people as John Doe's. And they file that action in federal court. And by doing that, under this law, they can limit their liability to two things. Number one, the value of the ship. And number two, the value of the cargo. Why is that important? Well, I believe that the estimated cost to repair the bridge itself has been estimated at $600 million. And then you're going to have the lives of those people who are working on the bridge. All of those people could be filing lawsuits. Those could all be worth in the tens of millions of dollars. You also have property damage to the cargo itself that could be claimed by those who were shipping cargo on this particular vessel. So when you add it all up, I mean, you have the potential here for close to $1 billion in damages from this accident. You also have people who could file lawsuits, for example, now that they're inconvenienced, they can't get to work on time, they can't transport cargo over the bridge, they can't drive commercial vehicles over the bridge, so the damages go up and up and up and up and up. That's why this particular law was passed in 1851, was because the fear was that if there's unlimited liability for ship, and there was a lot of ship accidents in the 1850s, then it could cripple this burgeoning shipbuilding business in the United States and the shipping transportation business. So Congress passed this law that says basically the only liability that this company has, the owner of the ship, if they file the lawsuit, is the value of the ship itself plus the value of the cargo. Now, I've read estimates today that that number would be in the tens of millions of dollars. When you talk about the value of the ship and the value of the cargo, it's in the tens of millions, not hundreds of millions. It's certainly not $1 billion. So by doing that, it's kind of a jujitsu-like legal maneuver where the defendant files the lawsuit first, thereby limiting their liability under federal law. You will see that happen here. I promise you with every fiber of my being, because if I'm the company, if I'm giving legal advice to the ship company and I tell them, you know, there could be $1 billion of damages because of this, then the quickest way to reduce that liability is for them to file a lawsuit and take advantage of what is now called the Titanic Law. So as you see that develop, and when you see this happen and it's reported in the news, you're going to hear this called something like a little-known law, an antiquated law, an ancient maritime law. You're going to see all of those characterizations of this when it comes out. But in my particular case in 2015, that's exactly what the ship company did. The lawsuit, the damages were limited to that value of all of those barges. And all of that money was divided equally among all of the people who were injured or damaged as a result of that particular accident. So that will happen here. And you can remember, you heard it first here on Camo X. Hey, the other thing that you heard on Camo X, top of the hour, you heard a little bit about that, shall I say, spat between St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman and Mayor Tashara Jones. When we come back, I'll play you a little of expanded audio from that East-West Gateway Council meeting today, and then we'll talk to the man himself, Steve Ellman, next on Camo X.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back to At Your Service. As we talked about at the break and as Maria Kina talked about at the top of the hour, there was a meeting today of the East-West Gateway Council of Governments. And essentially, that is just a regional council that gets together to discuss regional issues. And normally, there's not a lot of fireworks in these. But today, there was some fireworks. And I'm going to play you a short audio clip of some of the back and forth discussion that came from today's East-West Gateway Council meeting.
I hope that your viewers and listeners are happy with the status quo, because the status quo won today.
That's St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman afterwards. The meeting was a follow-up on this past fall's practicum to reduce violent crime, which brought regional leaders in politics and law enforcement together. After being told he couldn't introduce amendments in last month's meeting, St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman wasted no time first introducing amendments to change the makeup of the board overseeing the plan to reduce violent crime. Ellman wanted to guarantee a diversity of voices on the board.
This organization is the one place where you got people on the far right, the middle right, the middle left, and the far left. So when you do a regional document, the only chance I felt that we had to get something that would work is if you do both.
Ellman also proposed the board be at least half members of law enforcement. St. Louis City Mayor Tashara Jones pushed back, saying that the philosophies of the plan are split into three areas, and committing half the board to law enforcement would leave it out of balance.
You can't have a 50-50 split if you have three different methodologies that you use. And we're using the methodologies of prevention, intervention, and enforcement. And to tilt it heavily towards law enforcement, it unfairly imbalances the prevention and intervention sides.
Mayor Jones finally had enough when an amendment was proposed which would tie the board's ability to hire social workers until St. Louis hires police officers. Hear how it unfolded.
This simply says if you want to hire a social worker, you need to hire 10 cops first. I renew my motion.
I'm sorry. This is where I draw the line. Because you can no longer mandate what we do in the city of St. Louis's police department no more than I can mandate what you do in St. Charles.
So that was just a snippet of what happened today. And so when I heard that, I reached out to St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman. I wanted to catch him before the Denver Nuggets game. Hey, Steve, good to talk to you, sir.
Hey, Brad, how's it going?
Well, it's going well. You were a busy guy today. So we got
well, let me first of all just say the mayor is absolutely right. We can't tell the city how many cops to hire or to do anything.
But that's not what you were trying to do, though.
No, that's not what we were trying to do. We were trying what we can do is tell the collaborative that we're creating that they can't hire any social workers until the city hires 10 police officers.
Exactly. And to me, I thought that was crystal clear.
Yeah. And if the city doesn't want to hire 10 police officers, then there just can't be any social workers. Well, if you remember what happened next is in the debate, the Megan Green, the president of the Board of Aldermen, asked, well, are you saying that police officers are 10 times more important than social workers? And I said, no, I'm just saying we need 10 times more police officers than we do social workers. And if you want to hire one, hire 10 police officers at the same time. And she said, well, you know, wouldn't it be better if you treated police officers and social workers equally? And I said, if that's what it takes to get your support, I asked the chair, I said, please send my amendment back. And I offered a second amendment, which made it a one-to-one. It just said, if you're going to hire a social worker, you can't do it until the city hires a police officer. And even Megan Green pointed out, well, you know, we don't have a problem hiring 10 police officers. Our problem is while we're hiring 10 police officers, we got 15 that retire or quit. So, you know, it really was more symbolic than anything else.
Yes.
And she was wrong about three different approaches here. Thomas Apt, if you read his book, Bleeding Out, and this is the reason I was willing to go along with all this, because he makes it very clear that we got this polarization in the country right now. And
yes.
We got people that want to put everybody in jail. And then we got people on the other extreme thinking we just give them enough social programs and whatever, somehow crime is going to go away. Well, you know, the truth is somewhere in the middle, but I was willing to do both. But what I found is it was a bait and switch. And when Thomas Apt came here, Tim Breaker from Franklin County said, now, which one's more important? He said they're equally important. We need to beef up the police, and they need to do a good job of traditional policing. And then we need to have these social workers that go in and try to get these potential shooters, he calls them, potential shooters, and talk to them and try to get them to go on the straight and narrow. And that's how we proceeded. But what we ended up with was 95% of the document talks about the social workers, and they're not doing anything about the police.
Well, here's the question that I have, and I'm not asking you to tell me what somebody else thinks, because I know that's impossible. But from the information presented either at this East-West Gateway Council meeting or others, are there any policies coming from the representatives of the city of St. Louis that recognize that crime is not only a problem, but B, it's a problem regionally? Do you hear any policy positions coming from the city that reflect that understanding?
No. And you know, I lost the votes today, and I've lost votes before. And if the city has a different plan, then I'm all ears.
Mm-hmm.
But to just go and hire social workers and not get the number of police that we need is not going to fix this problem. You know, I was in 93, I don't know, you were probably in junior high. I was in the Missouri Senate, And
no, I'm not that young, Steve. Come on. I was already out of law school in 93, but go ahead.
Okay. All right, Brad. So but I was in the Senate, and that year we actually had more murders in the city of St. Louis than we had in 2020. That was really the worst year ever. And I remember Governor Carnahan, a Democrat, sent the highway patrol into the city during the summer. Mm-hmm. We put a little money in the extra money in the budget. The city hired more police officers. They hired more prosecutors in the prosecutor's office. And in 5 years, it was a long, drawn-out affair. But after 5 years, they had decreased the number of murders by 55%.
Wow.
This plan, their goal is to is in 3 years to reduce it 20%.
Hmm.
Well, we've shown that we can do this.
Yes.
With traditional policing. Now, maybe things have changed since 93, and maybe these social workers can help. But by themselves, they are not going to get this done. And one of the other shortcomings, Brad, is, you know, they've got, again, three different groups they want to be in this. And one group is law enforcement, but that's a third of them. The other group is elected officials, and the third group is basically people in the public and people with not-for-profits and people who are interested in helping these folks. And the one thing that's missing, though, is we've got one person from a victims relief group. Well, I don't want a bureaucrat. I would like to get some people who are actually victims mm-hmm. of these murders.
Sure.
Okay. And I would love to get them, and I would love to ask them if they could go back to the scene where their loved one was murdered. Who would they want? Mm. And they could change that scenario. What would they rather have? A social worker to try to talk to this person to put his gun down? Or would they rather have a police officer that will do what's necessary to protect their loved one? And I think 95% of the people are going to say, I think I'd rather have a police officer.
Of course.
If you want to send in the social workers 2 weeks before he shot my loved one, and that can do some good, that's fine. But we still need to have a police officer there when the violence is being committed, and we need to make sure they're punished.
Exactly. We're talking to St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman. And Steve, I don't want to keep you much longer because I know you got to get snacks ready for the Denver game. But
no, I got it on tape. So I,
oh,
I'm, I,
okay.
I don't like. I know your station doesn't want to hear this, but I don't like to listen to commercials.
Oh, except when they're on Camo X, then it's okay.
Except for Camo X. Actually, my brother's in the TV business down in Dallas, so I can't say that in front of him either.
Okay, good. Yeah, that would make holidays very awkward. But getting back to this though, where do we go from here? This meeting didn't accomplish a great deal of things when it comes to this major issue. Where do we go from here with the East-West Gateway Council?
Well, I think we just need to, you know, they have controlled the body, and I'm afraid that, you know, if you control the majority of the body, you can control the agenda. So I hope I'm wrong, but I'm afraid that the law enforcement is going to continue to be shortchanged on this. You know, it's kind of bait and switch. You know, I mean, I went along with this, even though for me, the most important thing is the law enforcement. But I agreed to listen to these other ways of addressing the problem, because, again, you played the tape that I said earlier. Other than Jefferson City and Springfield, the only place in between, with possibly the exception of St. Louis County Council, where I think they have a 4-3. You know, Republican, Democrat. This is the only place in the region where you have all points of view represented.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
exactly.
You know, you can come out to St. Charles to my council meetings, and we don't agree on everything, but everybody on my council is a Republican, and I'm a Republican. And then you can go to the Board of Aldermen in St. Louis, and everybody on that is a Democrat, and the mayor's a Democrat. And the only place that I think that, you know, we have a free and fair discussion where all sides are heard is going to be down there at East West Gateway. And today I lost. I was pretty much a party line vote. I think it was entirely party line vote. And I'm going to have to try to convince some of the more moderate Democrats, maybe some of the more traditional Democrats. And see, that's what I don't. Back in the good old days when I was in the Missouri Senate 18 years ago or 20 years ago, I mean, the Democrats, they believed in law and order. They supported the police. They didn't want to defund the police.
But a lot of the progressives aren't there today, and they've moved beyond that. Hey, Steve, I'm coming up on a hard break here, my friend. I'm going to have to let you go. St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman, thanks so much for joining us this evening here on KMOX. It's great to talk to you, sir. We'll chat again soon. Hey, when we come back, though, I want to open the phone lines, 314-436-7900. What do you think about this spat between cops, social workers, and which would you rather have if there was a shooter on your street? A guy with a clipboard or a guy with a badge? 314-436-7900. Next on At Your Service, KMOX. You know, it's interesting. We've heard in County Executive, St. Charles County Executive, Steve Ellman laid it out very well that East-West Gateway Council has members of the right, the far right, middle right, the middle left, the far left. And what you heard, and this I thought was very interesting, in the clip that I played there in the beginning of the last segment, right when Steve Ellman proposes this idea that the East-West Gateway Council will only hire social workers in the event that the city of St. Louis hires 10 police officers. What was the first thing you heard after that? It was laughter, the sound of laughter. And that laughter was coming from Mayor Tishara Jones. So I think it's interesting that in response to a proposal to increase police in the city to try to encourage, to give a carrot to the city to increase the number of police officers, that proposal was met by laughter. And I think that was very, very telling from the perspective of showing that the mayor of St. Louis isn't interested in increasing police officers. In fact, when she was running for mayor initially, she was running on a platform to defund the police. Now, what I didn't know until very recently is that my understanding has always been that the progressives are on the far extreme of the Democrat Party. But apparently that isn't the case. I don't know if you've ever read any news articles from a publication called The New Republic. The New Republic is where people who are too liberal to be conservative or too liberal to be a progressive, that's where they go and they write articles at The New Republic. And I believe it was about a year ago that there was an article in The New Republic that was basically stating that social workers shouldn't even be hired because social workers are really just cops with clipboards. So the far left, the progressive left, wants fewer cops, defund the police, hire more social workers. The extreme far left, the progressives, don't even want social workers. And I remember there was a quote from that particular article that said, if social workers are really honest and well-intentioned individuals, they're also going to be narcs. And they will, that's literally what this article was saying. And so you've got this divide in the country between, I think, most reasonable people who recognize that more police is beneficial. You've got a smaller minority of individuals, of Americans, who want fewer police. And then you have a smaller subset, even smaller than that, who are advocating for essentially no police. Now, think about, let that sink in for a moment. What reasonable person could take the position that we shouldn't have any police? There's really only one group that would apply to, and those are called anarchists, people who want no laws, people who think that you should be able to do literally anything that you want. That would not be good for our society. And just look at the city. I mean, when I came into work this evening here at KMOX, I watched at least five cars run red lights. My car almost got hit by a dude on a motorcycle doing wheelies down the road. It's a problem. And the answer to that problem is not more chaos. The answer to the problem is more order. And I think that order can best be effectuated with more police. Brad Young in with you this evening for another hour. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk John Stewart criticizing President Trump for overvaluing his property. But my friend, there's a biblical principle that says, don't be so consumed with the speck in someone else's eye. Look at the log in your own eye. That applies to John Stewart. I'll break it down next on Camo X.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.